Hello, we are transmitting to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century. Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost. Whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you. This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 372.LU0207, certificate number 12881. Doorbell.
Would you be interested in a hairbrush? Would you be interested in a hairbrush?
Hello, Lisa Lane. Welcome to the program.
So glad to be here, John Roderick. It's a delight. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure. You know, you and I have been chatting a little bit already today, just kind of getting to know one another, which is a separate little mini episode that's available on our Patreon at patreon.com/omnibusproject. This is the first time I've ever done this, by the way, sold the intro Patreon. And the reason I'm doing it is because we had such a delightful conversation that everyone in the country should pay $5 to listen to it.
May I throw something in, yet another rabbit hole? I need to pay homage here. We just discussed that I am a bit of a newlywed. I have a new husband in my life in this late chapter. And yes, one of the very first reasons that I knew, hey, this is a good guy, is that upon hearing about the Bean Dad controversy, yes, and he doesn't listen to my same podcasts, but he heard about it and he knew I was a fan and he just kind of heard about it. I think he heard about it elsewhere. And I was like, hey, I know that guy. Like, parasympathetically, he became a $5 a month subscriber to whatever it was that you were doing at the time, just on principle.
Wow.
That you were being raked through the coals for being a good father. And so I went, you know what? I think I like this guy. So shout out to my new man, Joe, and Patreon subscribers.
Well, and I feel like maybe your relationship isn't the only one that came together as a function of my Patreon. I think I bring lovers together.
And that's really worth $5 a month, is it not?
Yes, it is, my friend.
That's cheap.
Well, let me just say, by way of introduction, I know of you as a comedian, a stand-up comedian, because last year, I think, or earlier this year, my daughter's mother slash partner took a little gaggle of her girlfriends to see you perform live in Seattle.
That is correct. I currently identify as a stand-up comedian and therefore broken person.
Uh-huh. And confirmed.
That's your words against you. I hope you understand that, Mr. Roderick. And I am currently touring with an amazing show called Moms Unhinged. And so it is specifically for moms, but also for dads. And it's all female, all mom comedians all across the country. And we tour the country. I also currently do... I perform all over with Comedy Works Entertainment. I'm doing cruise ships this year, so I'm entering that weird phase of my life. Thanks. And then in a couple of days, I'm actually taking off on a tour called Pinups on Tour, and it is, I think they're based in Washington State, in fact, and it's a little kind of mini USO-style tour for veterans and entertainment for vets and whatnot, and I'll be touring the Rocky Mountain West for a little bit with them. So, yeah, that is exactly where I got to meet your daughter's mother, and it was awesome.
So when you say pinups on tour, that sounds kind of like that scene in Apocalypse Now where the Playboy bunnies jump out of a helicopter. Is that what you're talking about?
I mean, in this day and age, who can frickin' tell, I guess? Is that what it seemed like when I signed up for it a year ago? You know, it really, I think more in, well, I just realized at my advanced age, perhaps it is more like, didn't in MASH Colonel Potter fall in love for a moment with like an old broad who's kind of a sassy old broad who was
like
a former...
That's right, sassy old broad.
I think that's it. I think I am that function. And this is a tour where there's younger women like playing ukulele and singing and flowers in their hair and they're doing it so cute. And then I think I'm going to come up there and sling some old broad jokes.
Old broad jokes. Are you kidding me? That's the best.
Hey, you wanna... and it's true. That's my shtick. You want to talk about chin hairs? That's my jam.
I mean, everybody I know who is on their menopause journey.
Yeah.
One of the big benefits of being on a menopause journey, it seems like, is this tremendous feeling of not giving any cares ever again anymore. And the number of people around me who have stopped giving cares is a little unsettling. I'm like, hey, why don't you guys keep giving some cares? And she doesn't give any cares. I'm the only one left that's given cares.
You are. Thanks for holding the ship together.
It feels like...
You're keeping it together, daddy-o.
Once again... And you know who's not getting thanked for their service? Me, again.
That's right. Once again, it's the white men that never get any acknowledgement. No, it's true. The menopause is the joke factory that just keeps giving. Anyway, so that is what I'm doing as a stand-up comedian. But yes, thanks to... That was fun. And touring with Moms Unhinged is amazing. And it truly is. It's almost all women in the audience. But as I say, men are welcome. We're not men bashers. But it's an amazing experience to be up there in another one of us. So we're about 30 mom comedians across country. And another one of our comedians said something about it. It's like there's just a step. You don't have to translate. You know, I mean, I came up doing stand-up in Denver, Colorado at bars like the Lion's Lair at 2 o'clock in the morning. And not
you sure
often
have to,
the only woman in the room, not to be
you sure have to introduce yourself a couple of times.
Can you imagine? And if I'm talking about menopause, I mean, it's a lot of like, gentlemen, don't look away. Don't be grossed out. This is what your mother has to go through. And then after I've refined those jokes in those very hostile environments, it's pretty great to go into front of a room full of women who are like, you don't even have to explain. We're there. And it is true. It's a little bit, it makes you weak sometimes because it makes you, all I have to do is go chin hairs. And
it's like the scene in The Life of Brian where it's like, stone him.
Exactly. Exactly. And and at this point in my life to know that is what it has come to in this crazy, crazy world. I'm pretty much doing that. I'm doing the Monty Python, playing the fool and, couldn't be happier. It seems like a good thing to do in this world.
You're absolutely right that I have characterized stand-up comedians as among the most broken people. But I have to say, the fact that you are a touring stand-up comedian is especially impressive. And also, touring stand-up comedians are even more broken. It's a subset of a subset of broken people. So I'm amazed that you got up and got dressed and you're like sitting in a well-lit room. All of that is, you've exceeded all expectations.
I was like, no, you're right. I'm touring now. So that makes me more of an adult human being because I know how to like get a hotel room because it is true. It's open mic comedians who, listen, they are some of the smartest and stupidest people I've ever known. And it's funny that this became my final form. I didn't think I was funny my whole life. I was actually quite a too serious person. And I was a theater kid. So all the stage acting that I ever did I was a very serious Shakespearean actor. When I taught high school English back in the day, I took myself extremely seriously. And to have found this is really interesting, but to me, it's ultimately it's like the best writing exercise, you know, and it is a kind of useful tools. Sometimes it does make you broken and you can't get along with other people very well. But in this day and age, to process everything in the world, everything in my life, everything that's falling in my own physical form, everything, and to try to find a joke in there is a more fun place for my brain to be than other places a lot of the time.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my God. Well, and also you got to be open and let the jokes that are in there find you, which is its own kind of Buddhist journey.
It really is. Yeah, it really is. And it also does make you completely weird. And I also, and even, it's like any creative field though, right? Like sometimes I realize, oh God, I am not like the others. Like people of my age, people of my station, you know, sometimes it's like, oh yeah, right. I have a certain really perverted insight into that topic of cocktail party conversation because I hang out with stand-up comedians. And
yes.
Yeah. It's a, yes. It's a worldview, isn't it?
And you have a microphone here in your house. Are you, do you podcast in your
I don't regular really podcast. Life? Did a little round of podcasting back in the day, inspired by you and Merlin, and to tell you the truth, yes. With a young friend of mine. But I do, and I have continued to, even in my many, many iterations and being a mom and raising kids and in and out of performing and teaching and other things, I've always had a little bit of voiceover. I've always managed to keep a couple of voiceover jobs. Just kind of regular work that, although I am not going to lie to you, I just thought of this. I have this one recurring job that I have had for years, and I have said for years, I don't know why they don't just replace me with AI. This is such, like, it's insurance copy.
Womp.
I think maybe. I haven't had a job in 3 months. I wonder if that's done.
Everybody I know who does voiceover work, and weirdly, a lot of those people are women who are the mom voice.
Oh, yeah. Interesting.
I think it's a massive, like, part of the voiceover community are people that are like, Billy, you can't wear that to school.
That's funny, yeah.
And everybody I know that does that work is dried up.
It has dried up for me, and I stopped kind of pursuing it back a while ago, even in pandemic. It kind of got saturated.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not surprised. And like I said, that's why I have a mic here. I have a mic here because up until the last 3 months, I just realized, I kind of get at least a couple of gigs a month from this one client. And then I've just got it there in case I need to do any other, you know, content making.
Sure. That one gig a month is some kind of OnlyFans thing where it's like, I want menopausal comedians to.
Oh, I wish it is the most boring insurance copy that you, and I've said that they've sampled my voices out there. I wouldn't be surprised. Whatever.
Yeah.
Again, I don't want to go down those dark roads.
Well, okay, so you're reporting to us from the Mile High City, and you have now briefed us on the fact that A, you are a broken person, a stand-up comic, and a suburbanite. Who's living in a place where the weather can change on a dime. What's the weather like today in Denver?
Oh, today is a perfectly beautiful, sunny day in Colorado. Just the perfect blue skies. It's cooling down already at night.
People have no idea.
Yeah, I know. It's so dry.
People have no idea. Colorado is like the weather. You can't believe it. And I think that everyone should move to Colorado. I think that Colorado should absorb all the people who want to be somewhere they're not, and you can just be there, and then we can fence it off.
Yeah, although
spill over into Wyoming.
It's also very dry.
Yes.
And increasingly very windy. And I am just saying that, like, I look at my compatriots who live at more humid climes or at lower altitudes, and like, we're just wrinkly up here. I mean, there's a lot of, it's kind of a hostile environment, really.
Yeah, that's
And
right.
I live at altitude. Like, you can't bake a cookie without real science involved.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You have to tune the jets on all of your cars. I know.
Anyway, but yes, here we are in Colorado. And I am newly a new resident of the suburbs, like you. I am new to the suburbs. Plays into our topic.
Well, why don't you...
Should I ask you the leading question, John?
Yes, I think you should. I'm ready.
This first one might actually go nowhere, and that's fine. I have a backup question. But do you, any of your current homes or place that you would call home, do you have a doorbell?
Well, my house has a beautiful doorbell on the wall, a mid-century doorbell.
Chimes.
Mm-hmm. That at some point in the history of this house, the chimes were disconnected, and the hole where the doorbell was spackled over, or I think actually like removed, and a piece of wood was put where it was, and it was painted, so I can't even tell where the doorbell was. And the doorbell itself, I really wish I could hear, but when I talked to the electricians and the guys working on the house, they were like, we'll get around to that, but that's like a lot of trouble. And so they never did. And then my mom, problem solver that she is, bought me a battery-powered doorbell where the doorbell plugs into the wall inside the house, and then the button has a AAA battery and is as you know, screwed into the outside by the where a doorbell would be. And it worked for a while. Boom, boom. But then the battery died, or I don't know.
And with something that came one, did you have a receiver indoors, like you could place it somewhere and hear it elsewhere in the home?
Yes, yes.
It was just within, that little thing. But it was just one little system of its own. Yeah,
that's
it
right.
Just,
and within the range of a AAA battery. And the thing about my mom that I've learned is that when she's going to buy something, she doesn't go Google, like, what's the best version of this? What she does, it's very much like my dad. She's at the cash register at Lowe's, and she sees it, and she's like, that's perfect. So it was not the premium one. But what I've noticed is when the doorbell stopped working, I was fine with it. The problem is that there's a doorbell outside, a button.
Oh.
And so all the salespeople and all the my daughter's friends that come for play dates and people that are coming to work on the house, they push it and then stand there like a dozy cow. They don't hear a doorbell go off in the house, but that's not part of their reality. If it were me, I would push the doorbell, hear nothing, try it again, hear nothing, and assume, oh, the doorbell doesn't work. But that's not...
Most people would think they're not home.
They push the button and there's no sound of any kind. Uh-huh. I'm sometimes right on the other side of the door.
And can they see you?
Well, it's a glass door, but it's a frosted glass door.
I know, they sense you? Maybe they can sense you.
If I stand in the shadows, though.
Sure, I know. I feel
and
you.
So I have, so basically it's like a Jackass filter.
Yeah.
If you come to the house and push the doorbell and it doesn't ring, it's the same to me as if you didn't come to the house.
Sure. I mean,
I don't do anybody any favors.
How often does it happen that somebody rings it, gets frustrated, it must be broken, and starts rapping on the door?
Weirdly, almost never.
Because that's what you would do.
I would. I'd be like, dunk, 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 dunk. Okay. Hello?
All of that is funny and very John Roderick coded.
But this is the suburbs. And as you were saying, the suburbs have different rules.
Yep.
And I don't fully understand them. But, you know, I worked for Ralph Nader in the
late 80s. This is my second question.
Yeah. And I canvassed.
Great.
In the suburbs of Washington, D.C., in Maryland and Virginia, and in D.C. proper, and went and rang a lot of doorbells. And almost always someone answered the door and would let me stand there and talk to them about the Clean Air Act and politely nod and often as not give me $20.
Yep.
But if someone comes to my door and rings the doorbell,
Crazy. What are you doing? Assault.
No chance.
Who do you think you are?
Assault.
Hell are you doing here on my property?
No.
Okay, my next question was indeed, and we'll talk about more about your experiences going door to door. And I'm going to tell you now why I got into it, why this became popped into my head once you started looking for solicitations for omnibus topics. We, in our new suburb, and I mean, we went from very urban Denver, subscribe to the Patreon if you want to hear all about it, am I right? Very urban existence for the last 25 years of my life by choice. I lived as urban as one can get in Denver, Colorado. And now, because of circumstances, we live in a very suburban suburb, big McMansions in a beautiful, beautiful location. I mean, we live very close to nature. We're at altitude. It's lovely. But we're new to this neighborhood. And so in the spirit of, you know, being neighbors, we decided at Christmas time, we're going to have a holiday party for our neighbors.
We've
been here for almost a year now. Y'all have seen us move in. Right. We've waved to you across the streets as you do. You know, we've met a couple of some things happen here and there. We can talk about it. But, you know, in general, it's the experience of the suburbs where we're trying to be good neighbors. It is truly culture shock for me. I have never in my life lived under an HOA. And so
yes. Wow.
as you very well know, and you and your other podcasting partner, Merlin Mann, know, like, the fear of being in trouble is high on my list of unpleasant things. So it's a cultural experience. So we're going to have a party.
So Mother's Day is coming up. This year it's Sunday, May 10th. So it's really on the horizon here. And I've discovered a kind of a great gift for Mother's Day. And it's also like one of these Mother's Day gifts that's really a gift for everyone. What I'm talking about is Storyworth. Storyworth.com is a service where every week they will send your mother a prompt that she can reply to by email. She can send them voice messages. And it's basically an interview where her stories, it elicits her stories, it elicits her reflections. And then over the course of an entire year of these kind of weekly solicitations, so Storyworth compiles everything. It puts her words, her photos, her whole life into a beautiful hardcover book. Storyworth has a new unlimited plan. You buy it once and you'll be able to give Storyworth memoirs to friends and family all year. It comes with all their newest features, multiple full-color book copies. This is a great Mother's Day gift, but it's also a great Father's Day gift, a great Grandmother's Day gift, if there is such a thing. This has really helped get my mom's stories out onto the page. There's still time. Mother's Day is Sunday, May 10th. If you order right now, go to storyworth.com/omnibus. They'll give you $20 off if you put in omnibus, or if you put slash omnibus. That's storyworth.com/omnibus. $20 off. Get it done now in time for Mother's Day. storyworth.com/omnibus. Man, I am so fed up with my cell phone company, a cell phone company that I will not name. But the last time I went in there to do what seemed like a pretty simple task, the guy behind the counter was just mad upselling me. And I actually said, really early in the conversation, hey, don't upsell me on this. I'm just trying to get this thing done. I want to get out of here. And I'm not going to buy anything. And he was like, yeah, yeah, man, sure. I'm just telling you that this is a great new thing, a great new product that you didn't ask about and you don't need. And he would not let up. He ended up doing the thing that I asked him to do. But like, I had to kind of basically bark at him, like, just do the thing. And he was like, oh, yeah, yeah, totally, dude, totally. But anyway, and I was like, out the door. And I'm so fed up, and it's not just that I'm fed up with, like, that vibe, but when I look at my bill, I am really overpaying for cell phone service, and now I realize that Mint Mobile has premium wireless plans that start at just $15 a month. I mean, Mint basically exists so that I don't have to deal with my cell phone company anymore. And what's amazing is the more research I do, all plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. You can bring your own phone and phone number. You activate an eSIM in minutes and start saving immediately. No long-term contracts, which has always been a pet peeve of mine. Basically, no hassle. So it's right there. I can ditch overpriced wireless and get 3 months of premium wireless service from Mint Mobile for only $15 a month. I don't know what I've been doing this whole time. I mean, Mint Mobile's been sponsoring Omnibus for a long time, and like, my daughter's friends talk about it. The solution's been laying there right in front of me. If you like your money like I like my money, Mint Mobile is for you and Mint Mobile is for me. So shop plans at mintmobile.com/omnibus. That's mintmobile.com/omnibus. Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month 5 gigabyte plan is required, which is equivalent to $15 a month. New customer offer for first 3 months only, then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees are extra. See Mint Mobile for details. Go to mintmobile.com/omnibus. But looking at you here, if anyone's watching on YouTube, they'd be able to see that the room you're in has a lavender wall.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of like exciting sort of decoration, and it makes me think that from the street,
yeah,
does your house have anything weird about it?
Well,
is there an octopus on your flagpole?
So hard not to be soups weird, but yeah, we sure did pull up into our neighborhood with some pretty, maybe Beverly Hillbilly, really coated vehicles. Like,
okay,
my
on.
Sweet husband, who is, he is a captain of a major American airline, so he can pick, you know, whatever he wants for a vehicle. And a year ago, because we knew we would be doing some moving of materials and furniture and stuff around here, he bought himself a 20-year-old Toyota Tacoma, which he then covered in Grateful Dead dancing bear stickers, because that's who he is. He's a wonderful human being and a unicorn.
All right.
So
that's very
who
Denver.
We are. Yeah. I know, except it's not very Castle Pines.
But why didn't he get himself a fancy car?
He just wanted that truck. He loves that truck. He loves that truck so very much. And partly because then he called up my younger son, who is in graduate school in Washington State, who he was a teenager with his money that he earned commercial salmon fishing in Alaska for 2 summers. He bought himself a Toyota Tacoma. I'm trying to think. It might even be as old as this child is himself. I can't remember. And, you know, it's one of the consulted George, and George is like, yeah, if it's got 200,000, it'll go 300. And he can work on it himself.
But your son also bought a Toyota Tacoma?
Mm-hmm. And it's like, and it's his love. And he, you know, he's keeping it alive. I think it's also, my husband kind of vaguely likes to work on cars, not really, but like you can fix your own stuff. You know, I think it's that. I think there's a little bit of that. I don't know. He loves it. He loves that truck. But that, so do we present weird? We are trying so hard not to, but I think we do, whether we mean to or not.
Do you, Lisa, do you drive like an art car that has little figurines glued on the dashboard by any chance? That would be in violation of my HOA.
No, I don't find vehicles interesting at all, so I don't decorate. But well, when I had two little boys growing up and I had to drive a minivan, I did have magnets custom made that had the Batman logo for the sides. That I did do that. That was worth it. Because that was, again, trying not to lean into the suburbia of it all. No, for the truth is, that's the other car that we do park regularly. And we're doing so much work in our house all the time that we don't really park in the garage. No, I have a 2010 Nissan Cube. And it's bright red, and it looks like a clown car. So actually, yeah.
Bomp, bomp.
I do drive a comedy car, but I didn't mean to. It's a really great car. I've had it for that many years, and it just doesn't die, but we don't care about cars. Anyway, so we're trying to be good neighbors.
You got to put ground effects on that Nissan Cube.
Do I?
Yeah, I think that your neighbors would just be like, we're definitely going to their Christmas party.
Okay.
So when you open the garage door, is it full of like dead robots? Is it just, does it look like a normal person's house?
Normal person's garage. I have a kiln in there because I am a ceramicist.
I see. Okay.
So I have a kiln, but you can't see
that. Oh, it's a normal person's house. Oh, except I'm a ceramicist and there's a kiln in there.
And there is a giant, because like a comically, when I did a show last summer in Rapid City, South Dakota, they had this local venue for Moms Unhinged had printed billboard size banners, so like my head is 4 feet tall to put all over the town to promote our show. So we were like, excuse me, that's hilarious. So I do have one of those hanging in my garage.
Awesome. So
which
totally
I wouldn't have
normal.
Had room for back at my old little Denver house.
The neighbors are like, yep. So anyway, you're throwing a Christmas
party.
They
are yep. I am sure they are seeing me. And like you, John, I sometimes we are also late night people, so we're up late at night, and sometimes I need to do something, move a rock, change a flower that's going to take 4 different kinds of rakes. So they're aware, but we're trying to be good neighbors. So we're having a party, a get together. My husband is a great cook. He's going to have the best food. How are you going to invite your neighbors to a party? We have one of those central mailbox towers where the mailboxes don't you can't put stuff in mailboxes anyway. That's a federal offense. It's one of the laws of canvassing. How are you going to invite your neighbors to a party? Well, I made a little flyer, and we're going to go door to door, you know, passing out an invitation.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Well, the different responses we met, I said, this is an entry in the omnibus, because remember back in the day when you could go door to door for a political campaign or Girl Scouts selling cookies. That's really what I thought of. I used to sell cookies door to door. as a child. And we went, and everybody has a Ring doorbell. Some people came to the door, did answer, and seemed suspicious. Downright annoyed.
They'll have rings, so you're saying they have little cameras they can see.
That's what I would say. So you have not experienced that with your fake doorbell. You've got a whole prank situation going on there, but you're so old school and analog and postmodern that you're not filming it. That's perfect. It's just happening.
No, I'm just pranking people for my own just lols.
And you know about it or you don't. Did a tree fall on the floor? It doesn't matter. Everybody has a Ring doorbell. Some people came to the door. A few neighbors came and like, hi, we're your new neighbors. Here's the thing. Some were lovely. Some, like you're saying, we could see them right inside or sense them right inside and they're not coming to the door.
Right.
Some video doorbells nowadays, I don't know if you're aware, I was not, talk to you. They say, hello. If you're delivering a package, please drop it. If you would like to leave a video message, do it now.
Whoa, a video message?
Yeah. So they were like, hi, we're your new neighbors, having a little party. Hope you could come. It was also snowing because it was December in Caspines, Colorado. And it was like 5:30 at night. So it was getting dark as we walked, trudged the streets. And as we were on sort of like our last house that we were planning to do, we hear through the dark, Lisa, Joe, voices yelling. And there was this couple who we then hung out with the remainder of the evening. And they're just a hoot. They're just a hoot. Yeah. They're this older than us couple. And they came running down and they said, we saw you on the Ring doorbell. This is Barb, our neighbor, saying, we saw you. I said we should answer the door. But my husband wouldn't let me because he said, wow, they've been walking a long time. They must be looking for a place to stay. So we had been trudging through the snow for an hour and we were covered in snow. And like Joe hadn't been flying for a few days. So he had like gross stubble. So they were like strangers in our neighborhood. Don't answer the door.
That's what people do. You know, when they need a place to stay, they just go through a neighborhood ringing the doorbell. Hi, can we have a place to stay?
And so then they were immediate. And I mean, we made fun, like in the spirit of Christmas, right? Mary and Joseph going door to door. It was their room at the inn. And in December, like, okay, so even if you did think that it was somebody in need, so your response was, don't answer the door. So then they saw the invitation, came running down the street, and we are fast friends. It was just interesting. We had a wonderful party, by the way. People came. We're delighted. We learned more about our neighbors. Everything was great.
Lisa, what do you think the copyright law is on a video message that you leave at somebody's door? If it's like, would you like to leave a message? And you're like, hey, it's Lisa Lane, your neighbor. And then they're like, I'm putting this on the internet.
I could do some material right there. They could steal my material. Okay. And that's the thing, John. And you know, the funny thing is when I proposed this topic, my observation was, gosh, remember that ephemera, that moment in history where we could go door to door? That was just a moment. And then to think about why it changed, it doesn't go to any good places. Because what you just said right there, I started thinking about Ring doorbells and all of this. Well, turns out, and we have learned in like, since I've talked to Grant to come on this program, things have happened in the world, in the news, in the zeitgeist, that like, that is a question of what happens to that and who's recording it and do they have permission and are they signed up or subscribed to us? What does happen to my image and likeness when I tell a joke on your Ring? What becomes of it? Who owns it? And it goes into icky places. I mean, the truth is so anyway, that was my first instinct was like, gosh, remember that? Remember back to the days of door to door.
It never occurred to me that the doorbell is one of those things like the doorknob or the electric can opener, honestly, where I don't think it ever occurred to me that these were things that there weren't always, right? I guess there was like a little bell on a string, ding, 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 ding.
Yes, indeed.
But like when was the first, it's not actually logical even that a bell would be the thing you would use to signal that you had arrived.
So then I did that little dive, and you and Ken on the Omnibus have previously talked about the history of buttons. Mm-hmm. And very quickly in that discussion, once you get to the electric circuit button, that becomes a doorbell really quickly. That's a thing you do in seventh grade shop class, right?
Right.
Hook up a little doorbell. And so I did. I looked at the history of doorbells. And indeed, like, yes, there was the habit of rapping. There's knocking on the door, not hip-hopping. And then there is the other question that I find interesting once I started thinking about doorbell culture. Cops never ring the doorbell.
Cops don't ring the doorbell?
I don't think so. I think in general, I mean, I suppose if a cop is coming truly just to like canvas you or ask a question, but in general, if somebody's there, are you home? You know, if it's an urgent, if it's somebody doing a wellness check, I think in general, it's, you know, knocking on the door, I think still, even after all of the doorbell technology, feels like the more urgent way. But then right. To your point, so the doorbell was invented along with electricity. Same timing. It was one of the first relay switches. And yes, indeed, it replaced, as you say, right? Knocking was one way. There are cultures in the world today where they don't have doors. So how do you greet yourself? There's a call. There's a something if you're living in a hut or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. So knocking was the first thing. And then doors, as you say, you and Ken also have done some diving into bells here and there. The door and the technology of the doorbell also signifies wealth and prosperity. You know, having a door that you can ring for, a bell that you can ring for a servant, and then having a house big enough that you need a bell to ring. It's not just a knock on the door.
Aha, right. A knock on the door wouldn't be sufficient to carry up the stairs.
And then with electric doorbells, indeed, or your fake electric button doorbell, you know, having a receiver, you might have to have several receivers throughout the house, that
if
kind
I
of thing.
If I were down here in the bunker, and even if the doorbell worked, I mean, the bunker over here, not the bunker that I'm recording in, but the other bunker, the actual bunker.
Well, if you still cared about, I think that what I would submit is that if we still cared about doorbell culture, you would have a receiver or whatever installed there so that indeed you could be aware. And I think that most people today, by the way, John, we have a doorbell camera and we inherited this system from the previous owner, but in a cupboard somewhere is one we're supposed to install outside. Like we have more than one camera installed on our home for security, of course. And I had that back in my urban place in Denver. Now I just use it to watch baby deer coming in eating my yucca.
Oh, wait a minute. But you don't watch your neighbors walking around?
You sure can.
Let me ask you this about a Ring camera doorbell.
Mm-hmm.
If you walk up to a house that has a Ring camera doorbell and you don't push it, you knock like a cop.
Mm-hmm.
Does the camera still
records.
Record?
Yes. In fact, when we were looking for this house, so you have not been in looking for a house in these. It's interesting how quickly this has changed. When we just went through the process of buying this house within the last year and a half versus 7 years ago when I bought my little house, our realtor is very much aware. If you're on the front porch of any home and you're starting to say anything, I like it, I don't like, shh, assume there are Ring doorbells recording everything you say, whether you ring that doorbell or not. And ours is like that too. We've turned it off because it's too annoying, but it will trip for motion in the yard.
I remember when Los Angeles was on fire, a lot of the most dramatic footage was people's doorbells.
Yes. And back even when I lived in the city, I had a little video doorbell, different system, but I had a video doorbell. And more than once, the police asked if I had footage for crimes happening.
For crime. Oh, yeah. Right.
Yeah. Do you have that?
A couple of weeks ago, I was a guest on the local public radio station, and we were, you know, we talk about the news of the day. Or I'm sorry, it's news of the week. It's a little panel, and sometimes I'm included, journalists and that type of people. And we had a sitting city council person in our little coffee clatch talking about the news. And one of the news topics was the city of Seattle was talking about putting a few traffic cameras in a neighborhood that didn't have them, or expanding the traffic camera program to the effect of 5 cameras, something like that. And there was, of course, it's Seattle, so there was all this pushback, surveillance state, you know, kind of pushback. And a lot of people pointing out that maybe this is footage that ICE could subpoena. Mm-hmm. And this was, you know, all part of this police state thing. And we were talking about it. And I said, you know, this feels like we're fighting the last war here. Because you're worried about the surveillance state of like 5 traffic cameras pointed at intersections when there's a freaking video camera on everything now. There are cameras everywhere. They're probably of the five people sitting here at this table, four of you, your cameras are already hacked by the North Koreans and are sending this conversation. So it doesn't feel anymore like I'm not particularly worried about the city of Seattle being big tech. I'm worried that you can't talk to your real estate agent anymore about what a dump this house is.
Yep.
Because because everything is talking all the time.
And what I'm really, and then it happened while all of this is happening. After I knew I was scheduled to talk with you about this, there was a Super Bowl ad about the Ring doorbell, and it was a puppy finder. It was, I have these notes, I'm not saying it right, but it was, there was a feature from the Amazon-sponsored Ring doorbell that was like, lost puppy, our doorbells are automatically taking pictures of all the dogs in your neighborhood. And it was this feel-good commercial. And I sat there, go Seahawks, but I sat there and only watched the ads and went, whoa. So we're saying thumbs up to surveillance culture because it finds puppies. Like the next day that ad was pulled and Amazon got in big trouble and Ring doorbell has had to walk a bunch of stuff back, including breaking up with the Flock cameras that are exactly what you're talking about. Let's put five of these in our little neighborhood out here. It can help us with traffic stops and crime and the surveillance state. So all of this is like happening right around us. And again, going to kind of ugly places. But what I really worry about, John, is A, what has become of singing telegrams?
Okay.
Showing up on somebody's front porch with a surprise. And B, what are the young people, what is it like to grow up? My life's work and the source of all of my comedy, menopause takes over, but the reason I got into it originally, and I've written a couple of books from the perspective of not my expertise, but studying adolescent development. It's what I care most about in the world. What would it be like? And what is it like for your beautiful daughter growing up in a world where you know you are constantly surveilled? And up until, anyway, recently, we don't, as in this country, we don't probably equate it with like a big brother or a government or a big overbearing. It's just, we just know, like say somebody's filming every single thing. Can't talk to your realtor. Can't TP a house. Can't sneak out at night. What is it like to grow up knowing you are constantly on camera?
I mean, I want to go back to the singing telegram question because that does seem to be maybe the more salient of the two that you're asking. I was wondering why I haven't gotten one in a long time.
I mean, is that culture just gone? What is?
Well, I've been waiting for Jane Wiedlin to show up here since 1985, you know.
I remember when we were looking at high schools for my boys, and again, it's just a statistic, but a friend of mine was looking at one high school for her kid, and she said, well, they have statistically more suspensions. You know, they have more in-school suspensions than this other school, so that means there's bad kids there. And I said, maybe it means there's good teachers there. Right. You know, I mean,
right,
because they're all going to transgress. That is the life of an adolescent. And so I think what you're saying is right. When you're doing what the tasks of adolescence are, being a mess, are testing little boundaries, if you happen to get caught on every single one of them, it is a greater consequence than you and I who got away with it.
Yeah, if there had been cameras all over.
Right.
Well, but so this is the thing about having teens now, and I don't know if this is true. It must be true for you as it is for everyone, but they don't go out.
This is what I'm realizing. And my fear, John, two things. I think I can hold on to that. My fear is that they, is that their transgressions, is that how they fill that urge to sneak out of the bedroom window and go make out with your boyfriend, under the monkey bars down the street, is they do it online and they do it in ways that we can't see. And it freaks me out. Like if you're surveilled all the time, maybe it makes you a better, maybe it makes you a real good boy. You don't steal from me. Doubt it. There are the transgressions. You recently it's a different podcast, but I heard you and you just right now, I got to meet your daughter earlier on our conversation and see her. And you're talking about how the little ways that she is just trying to get away with your breaking your rules, flipping you across the room, just trying to say it is their life's work. They have to do it. Yeah. And then the other thing, to your point about what's scary about it, when I'm looking this up, doing my little fake research for the Omnibus Project about, ooh, doorbells, interesting. To my point about technology, the fact that your mid-century modern home, strangers coming a calling was such a point of respect in our Absolutely. Lives and culture that we had beautiful chimes dedicated to it, like works Absolutely. Of art in our home when somebody came a calling. And well, then in the
let
last...
Let me turn that around on you, yeah. Lisa.
Yeah.
Do you ever stop by a friend's house?
Well, this is the thing. We used to, and I kind of... The house that I raised my kids, we kind of had a pop-in house. Mm-hmm. And it's dead. You can't pop in. If I pop in to somebody's house, it's like there's a level of annoyance and they can see it on the door. But I think now it is more assumed that you better call first
or text,
of course. The truth is, it's not a big deal. If you do pop in, they see you on the doorbell, you wave. That happened to me recently. I did have a young friend stop by, and it was like such a joy that somebody's popped in, because I think pop-in culture is...
I used to pop in. It was my number one move. I had a pop-in house.
Like, all right, somebody might pop in anytime. No, and the truth is, and then I wonder how much of this is age, how much of it is I'm in the suburbs now, because now I find myself quite on the other side of things. And I sold Girl Scout cookies. I did canvas for an environmental organization when I was in college. I'm a pop-in person. We used to do May Day baskets, John. I mean, in my children's lifetime, we made little flower baskets for the old ladies in the neighborhood and went and ding-dong ditched, right? Mm-hmm. And now somebody comes to my door to try to sell me something. I am like, get off my property. Mm. It is interesting to me, and I've done research on this, door-to-door culture still exists, which is shocking. So, right, what I was saying is like, what is it that is the ephemera that's lost? Like, this is something that we have to describe to the futurelings, because they will not understand that there was a day that... Little Girl Scouts went door to door. Did you, John, did you trick or treat for UNICEF?
Did I ever? We would like go out boss. And trick or treat for UNICEF, and then you would go trick or treat again.
Oh, hey, we did it concurrently.
No, you would go when the sun was still out, you would go around and trick or treat for UNICEF, fill up your little UNICEF box, and then go home and really get ready, and then go. Do the whole neighborhood again.
So there was a day like that. And then there was a day. And if you think, so then I did my little dive on door-to-door sales, door-to-door canvassing. It is ancient, like the kind of life of a peddler, right? And in this country, for example, we have the Fuller Brush Company, sort of like become a stereotype now, right? So I look it up, the Fuller Brush Man. And that is a door-to-door company. Alfred Fuller, I believe in 1908 or 6, something like that, started it not in Philadelphia or Pittsburgh, but outside Boston. And it was a door-to-door, like brushes. Like he was really, and it was this whole, became part of American entrepreneurial culture and the housewives and this guy. And then he created an empire. And it was very much a fabric of the American society, right? Death of a Salesman took the tragic view of it. But the Fuller Brush Man, the ethos was very shiny and clean, and he made all of his salesmen buy overshoes one size too big so that if they got invited inside, they could slip them off real quickly, and really proud of delivering excellent service. They considered it like original market research. Like, we are going door to door and meeting these housewives, and what needs do they have? I'm going to meet these needs. Very proud of like just solid integrity and if not a lifetime guarantee, a 5-year guarantee on a hairbrush.
Oh, so they were hairbrushes? I always wondered what the brushes were, like dog brushes, shoe brushes?
Cleaning brushes were the first. And we're talking like chimney. I don't think it's that big, but like, and in fact, innovative. Alfred Fuller himself would go door to door and say, hey, what are your needs? Like, oh, you have that register for your heater that gets this dust and oily dust built up behind it. Well, and then he invented, like, really patented.
Oh, that's smart.
Truly patented some stuff and really, really believed.
So he invented the toilet brush. He invented the
may have been a toilet brush along the way. No lie. No kidding. And yeah. In his basement, very American dream story, you know, invented little machines that would twist the brushes and tested the bristles. And it was a wholesome story. They are very proud of the story. Grew and grew, empire. And, you know, young entrepreneurs could go out and truly make a living, and they were proud of that. So the Fuller Brush Man had kind of this cute American idyllic vibe about him.
Weren't they
women
also
did it too.
Sexy? Weren't Fuller Brush Men the type of person you would have an affair with?
Well, I suppose that's right. Any door-to-door salesman, sure, that's got to be a trope. The milkman, anybody coming door-to-door, sure. I mean, it's hard to imagine. You and I just looked it up together. There was a movie in the 40s, was it? Called The Fuller Brush Man, starring Red Skelton. So it's hard to imagine the sexy level back then, but maybe. Saying.
Red Skelton not being a sex icon. Maybe in 1948 he was.
But that could have been. What do I know of young Red Skelton?
Man, I've been cutting my hair lately and really conscious of the fact, you know, now that I'm getting my picture taken a little bit more for some reason, and I'm just studying these photos for whether or not you can see like sunshine off of my scalp because my hair is thinning. And I swear to you, like it's very much changing my whole feeling when I look at pictures of myself, when I see video, I'm like, oh my God, is it noticeable to others? I know it is, because of course I notice guys who are balding, and I look at them and I'm like, you don't know you're balding as much as I know you're balding. Of course they do. They're just living in denial, and I don't want to live in denial. But I'm so confused about how to address hair loss. I get tons of weird advice. I know there are really expensive clinic visits available, all the different shampoos and creams. I can't make sense of any of it. And that's why I'm so grateful to Hims. Hims offers convenient access to a range of prescription hair loss treatments with ingredients that work. As you know, Hims offers chews, oral medications, serums, and sprays. These are doctor-trusted ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil, and they can stop further hair loss and regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. 3 to 6 months, that's like midsummer. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Just think of Hims as your digital treatment front door that gets you back to your old self with simple 100% online access all in one place. For hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/omnibus. That's hims.com/omnibus for your free online visit. Go to hims.com/omnibus. Featured products do include compounded drugs, which the FDA does not approve or verify for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information. Individual results may vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride.
But then the interesting thing to me is I'm looking at this, the history of door-to-door sales. And again, the Girl Scouts of America, that stuff started in the 20s. And that was all teaching young women entrepreneurial skills and going door-to-door and meeting, canvassing for politics and all of this. What better grassroots way to meet your neighbors and talk about the issues? And then there was kind of the darker side of it, which was encyclopedia salesmen, known for the opposite of Fuller Brushmen, who were there to deliver quality, and they would, you know, come back and support their product. Encyclopedia salesmen became known for, and that's a internet-wide and worldwide trope also, as just being these jackals who would come, instead of coming when the housewife was alone. I mean, plenty of room to have an affair there, I guess. But also, you're going to get the little lady and you're going to address her domestic chores and help her. You come when the whole family is there because you're trying to sell that you need the whole family, and these encyclopedias and just a lot of sleazy sales techniques trying to get in. In fact, there was a law in 1972, the Federal Trade Commission required that most in-home sales include a 3-day cooling off period. It was called the cooling off law. Because of truly in response largely to encyclopedia salesmen going in, doing these in-person high-pressure sales. And
then it was like, too bad.
And very Glenn Ross, right? Like people come in person and setting, and we're going to talk to you and sell you some property, sell you some part of the American dream that was not great. So the Federal Trade Commission, that was the cooling off law or whatever, and then encyclopedia sales. Well, first of all, encyclopedias went by the wayside. And indeed, their cold calling stopped in 1976. So there was a change in culture. But I mean, if you think about it, in our lifetime, the SNL Land Shark sketch, first season of SNL, Land Shark, somebody at the door, it really is in response to that. That's the joke, is like, is there somebody here to sell me something?
I have a set of 1968 encyclopedias.
Yes, I know. I think I've heard you talk about that.
Yeah, and they were, you know, my parents bought them. I think it was an investment, quite an investment. They bought them when I was born.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here are the encyclopedias that are going to carry this boy through life. And then we had a second set. I think we had World Book encyclopedias, too.
Wow, fancy.
Yeah, I know. We just had a whole shelf of encyclopedias, but I never asked whether they bought them from a salesperson or whether, I can't imagine they went to the showroom.
I know. I don't know if that there were showrooms. I think encyclopedia sales were almost exclusively. In fact, I read something about it that, like, if you went to a bookstore and asked for an encyclopedia, they would refer you to your local sales guy. I don't think you could buy encyclopedias anywhere else.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
I'm going to text my mom while we're doing the show.
Oh, please do. I can't wait. Uh-huh. By the way, my mother spells her name the exact same way as your mother. She pronounces it differently, but how about that?
Yeah, isn't that something?
So we had canvassing and unicycle. Now, the other thing is I actually, in college, I had a horrible job because I was trying to go to acting school and do creative things. So, you know, we had the McJobs. I actually called for an encyclopedia company and called, I think it was Ogden, Utah, like for a summer, and called and tried to set up the appointments for the traveling encyclopedia man. I was calling to, hey, can we set up an appointment so that you and your husband can receive him? And I remember just feeling real yucky about it. Oh, it didn't feel great.
So even then it was no longer just like walk around a neighborhood with a briefcase and
1978, the encyclopedia company stopped. I think that's what I said. The cold calling. So then what it was, that they would have people like me in a little call center cold calling on the telephone to arrange an appointment. Well, what night would work for you? Can you imagine saying yes to that?
Wow. Wow. How many people said yes?
Okay, this is another thing I want to get to. To me, I just remember being so very profoundly depressed by that job that I couldn't do it for very long. And same with when I went canvassing door to door. But for this very episode, I started thinking about, so what personality does it take? Because even the Fuller Brush Man back in the day had to experience a certain percentage of rejection. What would it take? Like, and I did it as a little kid, and I don't think it was easy for me to go door to door selling Girl Scout cookies.
No.
UNICEF is easier with your friends. Did you ever do anything like that? Well, canvassing. Was that easy for you to go and have those conversations?
No, they made us sell raffle tickets.
Okay.
When I was a Cub Scout, and I think for the YMCA, and I hated it so much.
I hated it.
And I remember one time in particular, my mom was going to a furniture store, and she said, "Well, you stand out front and sell raffle tickets while I'm in the store." And it was a rainy, dark night, and I was standing out there in my Cub Scout outfit selling raffle tickets. And it was the old America where, you know, men had leather bottom shoes, like they were all wearing wingtips, and women all had umbrellas and skirts and it just felt like I was the little matchstick girl, and I sold not a single raffle ticket, and was suddenly, like, over time, I guess, not suddenly, but over the course of this, just got more and more covered in pathos, just like slumping down.
I was imagining you, 10-year-old going, what am I doing with my life? Yeah, what is it all
for? Just holding
for?
Up this little book. So would you like to buy a raffle ticket? And they're just hitting me with their... with their
their
bamboo
umbrellas
canes.
And newspapers.
No, may would I? Wouldst thou buy? And women just like, psh, and it broke my heart.
What
by the time my
for?
Mom came out, I was just ruined.
Okay, this is how I feel about it. And when I think back to it, every age of my life, this is how I feel about it. I still don't like barking on the streets to sell comedy tickets. And sometimes I have to suck it up and play the part, but I hate it. What does it take? Because, okay, so I called a friend of mine who is a door-to-door roofing guy.
Oh, yeah, we get those.
Uh-huh. And when I receive people like this, we get door-to-door roofing, siding, right, pest control, windows. All of these.
Yeah.
I get, like, really, what are you doing here?
If I were going to make an investment in windows for my house, I would be researching it online.
We got the Google, bro. What are you doing? And they also don't usually, to me, start with good rhetoric. Like, I learned this as a canvasser. Like, you know, I appreciate it when people don't BS me. So if you start with, hey, how's your day going, ma'am? Why do you care? Get out of here. I mean, so prone to, like, don't waste my time. My husband, on the other hand, he falls for it every time. He's like, I respect the hustle. Oh, he's signed up for pest control we don't need.
No.
He's
like,
So what is the percentage of suckers? And I asked this friend of mine, who is a grown man, a successful man. He doesn't truly go door to door anymore, but he still works in the industry. And he started after college doing door to door sales. So he's a roofing company's representative. And right. He told me how it works. Anyway, my friend said that he thinks that Ring doorbells changed the culture, but not prohibitive to door to door sales. He says, okay, so now people know, but I guess they have their tactics for coming through. He says, I thought it was interesting. No solicitor signs. This is kind of a known thing. No solicitor signs don't mean anything.
Right. Day sleeper. Remember those signs?
Or don't remember they put it up. He said there is one sign, handwritten sign he will always respect. If it says baby napping, do not knock that door. Well done. But he said what changed the culture. He thought of door-to-door sales, door-to-door culture in this country is post-pandemic, he said, and kind of getting back to your kid, people don't go anywhere. And he said when it used to be that when you knocked on a door, and you knew it was dinner time, or you knew whatever, it was after work. And if people were home, it was like they were on leisure time and they were there, you know, whatever. You came to their door, they talked to you or they didn't. He goes, now people usually work from home and they work different hours and they don't know. And now it very much feels like you are invading their territory.
Yeah, right. The intrusiveness. I was thinking about this because I was such a dropper inner. I was in town and I thought about dropping by a friend's house, and it's a friend's house I've dropped by 1,000 times, but there was something different now. It felt intrusive, and it wouldn't be any more intrusive than it ever was, except I know their reaction would be, why didn't you text me? And it's so hard to remember before the pandemic.
Right.
Because it still seems like the same world. But do you know when the first Ring camera was, or when was the first doorbell camera?
First doorbell camera, gosh, you know what? I don't have that here. That's funny. Of all of the doorbell history I did, I was like, oh, yeah, then the Ring thing. But I mean, well, we can just know it from our own, like, yeah. In the years. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. When did we really start? I really think that in true sort of saturation, I obviously have some articles up here about Ring doorbell. I mean, it's really 10 years.
Right. I bet 2015, the first real one.
Where it's real saturation, right? Where like you assume that everybody except John Roderick has one, which by the way, we can go back to the very Dada experiment that you have going on in your front porch is that you have the doorbell that doesn't ring to anything. Hilarious. Yes, postmodern Dada. But then also, whatever happens there, people are just frustrated, but it's not on TikTok. That's amazing.
Oh, I know. You're absolutely right. It never occurred to me to put up a second camera where it just shows people pushing this doorbell over and
over. And John, that's a whole thing. When I just started, like, if you Google sort of doorbell, you get, like, doorbell camera, and then you get people pranking their delivery guys, or you get, you know, remember in the pandemic doorbell cameras, there was a lot of sweet little, our neighbor across the street left a thing for my little boy every day, or, you know, we left treats for our delivery driver, thank you for your service. And that kind of culture is out there where everybody's filming things. But then there are things where people pranking there, or like, oh, look at my son's reaction when he
Right.
Whatever. Or when a raccoon came to the door. So it gets, everything's a grift. Now it's AI. People are doing it. It's like a whole joke culture. But
I thought the main purpose was, oh, look at this person stole my package. Or like,
well,
the
then
UPS
there was that,
drivers.
Of course. That's yeah. the main reason for it originally, right? Is yes, exactly right. It's security. It's a security camera. Who, this person stole my package. This person got, yeah, exactly. Peed on my lawn. This person stole
my
windmill, or you know, whatever it was. And of course, and again, you're saying that with the flock cameras that your city council was just talking about, is that that's what it's meant to do, is hey, we're going to have less minor crime like that or missing people. And then that came into play also in the recent news of, you know, when people go missing, hey, the Ring doorbell may or may not have legal or illegal record of that and what becomes of all of that footage. But it certainly has changed the way we visit one another in our homes. And it's interesting where we're connecting. We all know this, right? Is like on the internet and these kids today. I mean, now it's a novel thing. I just heard something like kids are getting together at bars. Can you believe it? It's crazy. It's like this new thing they're trying.
What now? Bars?
And wouldn't you love to hear the chimes hanging in your house now? Like, I bet they had options. I bet you could program them. I mean, that was a sign of just sophistication to have fancy melodic doorbells in your home.
I thought it was Westminster chimes was always the default.
There were definitely, probably it was default, but they were different. There were all kinds of things. And I mean, then it became musical door chimes in the 1930s. 2013 was the invention of the Ring doorbell. There you go, fact checkers.
There you go. We were very close.
We were very close. And so the sound evolution of doorbells. And I mean, of course, I can't think of an example, but I feel like there's funny example, like in the Flintstones, isn't their doorbell like probably a bird? You know, there's how to modernize and truly, it was just like a personalize your experience. But again, the thing that is lost, the ephemera, the thing that our children will never understand like a dial-up phone is once upon a time, we used to send our children out unaccompanied door to door to sell things to their neighbors. And we did this to all of our children, whether they had neurodiversity or not, and whether they had issues with speaking to strangers. I mean, we just did it. And once upon a time, we were, maybe some of us, delighted when the doorbell rang. It was infinite possibilities. What could happen? What delightful thing might be around the corner, right? What surprise in our evening? And that is something that I surely feel will be unknown to the futurelings, whatever form they may take.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And, you know, I was just thinking here as we were talking, I feel like there was, you know, if you look at like any kind of sitcom that was set in a New York apartment.
Sure.
Those doorbells were all like, like it was a buzzer.
Buzzer.
And then part of the suburbs you're talking about, part of the, I feel like the doorbell is a huge part of, maybe an outsized part of what you think of as your home in the era that we grew up in. Like the doorbell is kind of the sound of your home.
Sure, sure.
But that they didn't keep evolving. Like the doorbells that you would have in a 50s home and the doorbells you would have in an 80s home all kind of sounded the same. Bang, bum, you know, yeah. Bing, bong.
Yeah.
There wasn't, we didn't turn a quarter to like a different kind of, there wasn't a 90s doorbell sound.
No, and indeed, it's funny, when you think about it, even now the Ring doorbell, I don't know, maybe we can program them, I've never heard it, but when we first got phones, we could, remember assigning a ringtone to your flirt your friend, your mom, you could assign a ringtone, probably, so, you know, it is interesting that we didn't, that the technology doesn't seem to have gone there.
No.
Doorbell isn't a thing anymore. Now those are just cameras. Back in our day, it was possible. I mean, just that we lived, what ephemera this was, that we lived in an age where maybe that doorbell ringing, you know, get a cute bathrobe, it might be Ed McMahon rolling up and you just won your retirement.
That's right.
Good things happened at doorbells. And now it feels like, maybe not.
That's exactly it. It used to be when the doorbell rang, you ran to answer the door.
And of course, occasionally you have the other trope of, or it is someone from the military coming to tell you the very, very worst news, but they would respect you enough to come in person, right? That was it. Paying a visit in person was held with some decorum and respect. And I guess the truth is, why did it go away? And I keep going, God, it goes down all these other ugly paths. But the truth is, because as you're saying, even now, if you could pop into somebody's house, they'd be like, well, the hell didn't you text? What is wrong with you? We have so many other entry points, and door-to-door sales people don't have to rely on that because they've got so many other weird and invasive and predatory ways of finding us, right?
My mother replied, and I said, when you bought those encyclopedias in 1968, did you get them from a door-to-door salesman? She says, yes. At least from a guy who came to the house and spent the evening convincing us to buy them. I don't know if he knocked on the door or if we sent in some flyer that was in a magazine. I think there were several sales levels. We bought at the expensive level with nice bindings and the children's encyclopedia set as a bonus.
Dang, shoot,
so the
that's
other
a good
encyclopedia
mom.
Set was a bonus encyclopedia.
Bonus. You got
set.
The bonus encyclopedia. So there you go. It may not have, in that day and age, it would likely have not been an actual cold call, but that's exactly right. If you're at a bookstore and you're interested in the or at a library, how do I get one of these sets for my very own? You send in a card. So they sent in a card, or somebody called them on the phone, or they met a man, and they arranged, and they came. And can you imagine, even now, actually kind of odious to me, having anyone trying to sell me something in my very own living room? Ew.
Sitting there and saying, listen, you're going to want the children's encyclopedia because it's a gateway to the real encyclopedia. And it was.
And it was.
I read the children's encyclopedia until the day that I was like, I want to know more.
We just had the opportunity outside Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where I went and visited my husband's mother, and in a little rural town out there. And we went through old boxes, and we found this old book by National Geographic, Our Universe.
Yes.
I mean, this thing, the pictures of aliens in it, like, were the things of our third grade nightmares, as vivid as anything. And absolutely pouring. I mean, you and Ken have talked about it, like, beautifully. The age of encyclopedias we miss. Maybe the age of door-to-door selling salesmen. I wondered that, too. Like, what have we lost and gained in our culture that we don't have that element of surprise? And I don't know. To me, it does feel like a little loss, like community, like, we are having some work done in our yard right now. And truly, once again, in our very own neighborhood right now, after establishing ourselves with our neighbors, we had a wonderful party. I baked cookies and I just want to take them and say, hey, pardon the dust. Here we are again. We're at it. It really, I have to get up my gumption to go do this, because it is received, even though now these will all be received pleasantly. Every single one of these people, if they are home, will be, oh, thank you so much. But it feels like an invasion.
I'm going to do an experiment. The next time my daughter and I are out driving around, I'm going to pop in.
Do a pop in.
And she is going to be appalled.
Blow her mind.
But I'm going to do it, and we'll just see how it goes, because it could be a total disaster.
You're going to do a pop in to your friend or her friend?
Don't know. That's the thing about a pop in.
That's the thing. That is the thing about a pop in. Nobody knows.
Planned pop-in.
Could go any damn way.
I'm going to be going along, and I'm going to be like, you know what? We know somebody that lives there. Oh, and she's going to go, whoa, 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 whoa.
We are not. It is not done. Yeah. And it maybe isn't done, except that it is still interesting to me that those who are doing it, political canvassing is still a thing. There are laws about it. There are mores about it. There are best practices. I mean, it also gets you to mind space. When I was canvassing in college years, I remember, like, I had a theory that anybody who had columns as part of their suburban home architecture, forget it. I'm not going to get $20 from them. Or a circular driveway. Nah, forget it. You know,
rich people stay rich for a reason.
I guess. Yeah, anyway, so I think that's it. It's a thing lost in the past, and we have gained and we have lost. But I just wonder how ever you're going to send a singing telegram again. And I do wonder how the youths are going to, what it's like to grow up and just knowing you're constantly on camera.
And that concludes Doorbells, entry 372.LU0207, certificate number 12881 in the omnibus. Futurelings, you know that social media is just anymore an opportunity to post Ring cameras capturing, you know, people doing terrible, terrible pranks.
Terrible things.
City-destroying fires, or people stealing your packages, or in my case, increasingly, or going forward, it's going to be videos of people pressing my doorbell that doesn't do anything. That's what social media is good for.
A good social experiment.
There are two things that it's good for. One of them is watching this show and all other Omnibus 2.0 shows on YouTube at youtube.com/@theomnibusproject. And also socializing with other futurelings. Omnibus fans, and they're across a very broad spectrum of interesting people. Go to Reddit, go to Discord, Facebook, and just search for futurelings and you'll find them there. Also, there are Omnibus Project social media accounts in all those places at Omnibus Project. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can visit our website at omnibusproject.com and submit a proposal to do a show just like Lisa did today at omnibusproject.com/submit. And you can send us physical mail. Care of the Omnibus Project to 609 Southwest 150th Street, number 48084, Burien, Washington, 98166-9998. And lastly, we have a very active Patreon community at patreon.com/omnibusproject. Lisa and I talked for about a half an hour before we did our doorbells entry today, where she explained some very interesting things about her life and her living arrangements and her career. And it's a great little talk. So you can watch that other sort of get to know me episodes, as well as listen to probably 6 years worth of addenda episodes featuring America's smartest boy, Ken Jennings. So go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and become a supporter of the show.
Futurelings, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come. If the worst comes soon, this recording, like all our recordings, may have been our final word. But if Providence allows, we wish you many goods and cheese and hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.